Hello and welcome to the CBI's SME webinar, today delivered in partnership with DHL. My name is Deborah Fraser and I'm the Chief Commercial Officer here at the CBI. Now, the focus of today is really to help you, our SME community, understand the recent and upcoming customs and border changes arising from the EU-UK Trade and Cooperation Agreement, the TCA. And look, we've got a really jam-packed session for you. It's going to be a real opportunity for you to hear about the current supply chain constraints, specifically what they mean for SMEs, gain insight into the conversations the CBI is having with government. Here's solutions for SMEs in the short to medium term from DHL, who I have to say at the recent SME Council, SMEs were singing DHL's praises for the support they were getting. So Gordon, we're delighted to have you on the call. And what also the CBI is doing to support business. We'll also be going through some resources to help SMEs, help you through this challenging time. And to bring this all to life, we're delighted to be joined by Ed Leahy from Eurelay, and he's going to really take us through that, how they've driven commercial success against the backdrop of the new relationship with the EU and the pandemic. Now, look, we've got three fantastic speakers. We've got Russell Antrim, who's our head of EU trade at the CBI. We've got Gordon Wright, who is vice president of regulatory affairs at the EU for DHL. And Gordon has spent the last 20 years specialising in supply chain security solutions and trade facilitation at an international level. And we have also got, as mentioned, Ed Leahy, who's the finance director for Eurelay. And Ed has been with Eurelay for 4 years now and is responsible very much for obviously finance, but also Brexit planning and operational projects, in particular mitigating risks due to Brexit and COVID. But first off, I will just hand over to Russell. Russell's going to give you a bit of an overview of the Brexit landscape from the past 12 months and talk around some of the specific challenges that SMEs are working and how the CBI is looking to navigate some of these changes. So Russell, over to you.
As Deb said, so I'm Russell Antrim. So I head up the CBI's EU trade team. My team, we've been on the whole Brexit thing for over 5 years now, so we've got lots of scars to show for it. And our team is now focused kind of on how we're helping businesses adapt, how we can build ambition from the agreement, which we'll touch on later, and also how can we use some of the newfound freedoms of Brexit to benefit UK businesses. And actually, UK yesterday, I was kind of trying to jot down my thoughts for today's session, and I remember that I'd done a webinar for SMEs almost a year to the day, just after the TCA was agreed. And I actually read the first line, and it opened with government setting out post-Brexit agenda, negotiations with EU on NI continue to grind on, and a year of my life flashed before my eyes. However, just because the politics feels familiar, albeit with some of the main kind of protagonists swapping deck chairs around, we do kind of know more about the trade agreement. We know the challenges it presents for firms. We also kind of know where opportunities are and where we would want to build ambition and kind of want ambition to be built out in the long term. So in under 5 minutes, I'm going to try and give, as Deb said, a bit of context, a bit of the politics, and then pass on to Gordon and Ed, who happen to do this day to day, and will be a lot better than me at talking about the technical details. So three things to cover. So state of play for businesses on the ground, kind of helicopter view, state of play in the political negotiations, what's around the corner, why it matters, and then finally what the CBI are doing. So I'll start with the first. Obviously, a year into the TCA, lots of changes for businesses across the piece. New customs, IT systems, rules of origin, new restrictions on business travel. And while recent figures on exports to the EU haven't shown a dramatic drop off, the challenges presented by Brexit haven't been easy in the slightest bit, as I'm sure everyone can attest. For some sectors of our economy, it's been a triple whammy of red tape, double regulation, rising compliance costs. And for smaller businesses, many of them, it's been simply too much. In general, we found that smaller firms, shorn of resources, the manpower, and a lot of time the cash reserves of their larger kind of counterparts, have been kind of less able to adapt and anticipate change. And although many of the barriers are the same, and they keep big businesses up at night as well, actually those challenges for smaller firms have often been prohibitive, and they've actually ceased trading with the EU altogether, which is not a good thing because this stuff really does matter. I mean, if we look at the Northeast alone, got almost 200,000 jobs are reliant on exports. Companies that export, they pay 7% more than the median wage. And actually, businesses that export goods are more productive, and actually recent studies say 21% more productive than counterparts that do not trade. So if the government is like really serious about whether it's leveling up, you know, raising living standards, productivity, you know, this stuff really does matter. So we've got the TCA and it has challenges. And there's a problem, which brings me to my second point, which is that kind of age-old Brexit boogeyman, which is politics. Because the politics, we know there are challenges, but actually to try and address some of those challenges and change them and make it easier for firms, the politics is really holding that back. And it means the changes that everyone on this call, I'm sure, are experiencing now are here for the foreseeable future. The reasons for that are manifold, and I don't need to go into all of them, but I think a big key blocker in this is Northern Ireland. I won't get bogged down into the intricacies of the Northern Ireland protocol, but I think the acrimony, the kind of impasse, the tactics employed, not just by the UK, but also the EU, have undermined trust. And it's that trust that is going to be absolutely critical if we're going to kind of build more cooperation and kind of reduce some of those market access barriers that we're experiencing now. Liz Truss has come in, replaced David Frost. The mood music is more positive, the atmosphere more cordial. But so far, it hasn't garnered any developments on the technical side of Northern Ireland. So I think it's something that is going to take time. We've done huge amounts of engagement that we have had some successes. But until that is done and that is kind of sorted, you then have a trust building exercise. And that's when we can really get into looking at, OK, where does the TCO open up opportunities to build ambition? And I suppose for firms, because things aren't going to change, they really need to, you know, be adapting. And this is why it's so great that Gordon and Ed are here to help companies do that. They need to adapt, get used to the new rules because they are here for the foreseeable. I think what's also important is they actually make their voices heard. I think it's on this latter point that the CBI could be particularly helpful, and a little bit of the other stuff too. So I'll finish up quickly running through what the CBI's approach is. And I can boil it down into kind of three prongs, I suppose. So the first is getting businesses as much support from government as possible. We have weekly meetings with the government and calls. Actually, we've got a fortnightly call with the Paymaster General in the Cabinet Office, who is actually leading kind of business preparations. Our DG Tony Danker is actually jumping on one this afternoon, where the new Brexit Opportunities Minister, Jacob Rees-Mogg, is making an appearance too. So we do have this regular kind of contact with the government where we can take first-hand evidence that we hear from our members and take it to the top echelons of government. And it's really useful, and we have got some significant wins out of that. So please do not stop getting in touch with us and telling, because your challenges have as much weight as the challenges of big businesses. Second, for us, is getting past the politics and onto ambition. I mentioned our engagement in Northern Ireland, but it goes far wider than that. We are talking to policymakers across the UK and the EU. And I think, you know, although the politics is difficult at the moment, it's absolutely critical that we continue to keep dialogue on the EU side. So we're talking to our sister federations in those countries, kind of emphasising the joint business interest in kind of reducing some of these market access barriers. And we're even looking at bilateral agreements. So listen, the trade and cooperation agreement is unlikely to change anytime soon, but that doesn't mean that we can see if there are opportunities between the UK and individual EU member states and stuff like business travel, which will be affecting services firms in particular. And then third and finally, the future of the UK kind of post-Brexit. So far, I think everyone will probably say that Brexit has caused problems and very little in the way of positives, unless you're a lawyer. If we accept that you know, the barriers between us and the EU are here to stay, it's imperative that there's a laser focus on the UK side to say, okay, how do we actually use some of these newfound freedoms that we have to deliver better growth and greater competitiveness? Now, the CBI have been absolutely clear this isn't about a kind of bonfire of regulations. It's not changing a whole swathe of regulations for the sake of it and actually making it, shooting ourselves in the foot and making it harder for firms. It's about how does the UK regulate in a kind of smarter, better, more agile way that helps companies to grow and provides an environment in which people want to invest and can grow their businesses. And I will probably sound like a broken record here. Again, if this is something that you are interested in, you pay the CBI money, do use us, make your voice heard. So whether it's on Brexit and the challenges you're facing, or what opportunities you think the UK can grasp, please do get in touch with us and the team.
I'm really pleased to hand over to Gordon next. So Gordon's going to be providing an overview of the sort of end-to-end solutions and support that DHL can provide, including their work in particular with SMEs. And so Gordon, over to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Debs. First of all, I'd like to thank CBI for inviting me to talk to you today, specifically focusing on supply chains and trade routes between the UK and the EU. What I want to do, though, really, is use this opportunity to talk about some of the impact that we've seen from Brexit on DHL and the way that we operate day to day, talk about some of the statistics, focus a little bit on the opportunities that we see within the current environment with the TCA and so on, and maybe also talk a little bit about how you can help yourselves in terms of your exports to the European Union. As you can imagine, within DHL, the SME community is really, really important for us, and that's mainly been driven by things like the growth of e-commerce, which I'll touch on later. But the big impact, I guess, for the UK has really been around the new challenges with Brexit and the new rules that have been put in place, the customs procedures and so on. And I think, you know, being realistic, we all know that it has really fundamentally changed the relationship between the EU and the UK in terms of trade, because we've got these new challenges and procedures, new ways of trading, some additional costs and so on. But opportunities still do exist, and I want to spend some time talking about that as well. So obviously, when the UK was a member of the European Union, it had free movement of goods and services and so on. Trade was more or less seamless between us and our biggest market at the time, which was the European Union, as it is today. But now we're in a much more a different environment where there are some challenges. Now, most of these challenges have come about because we've got these new procedures that we're having to implement, but they're not completely new to us, because we know that before we entered the single market, we were actually trading like we do today with Brexit. There was a requirement for customs declarations, both going into the EU and coming back out again. And some of the early things that we've seen is that when you look at the statistics from the Office for National Statistics, in terms of exports into the EU, they've fallen by about 12%, with a value about 20 billion compared with 2018. And this one I found quite interesting. Looking at it from the other way around, UK imports from the EU have actually fallen by 45 million in 2021 compared with 2018. Now, that could be a sign that people are actually buying goods on the domestic market and may be good for UK industry. I'm sure CBI know a lot more details about that. But focusing on some of the issues that we've seen at an early stage with the procedures, the transitional procedures starting to be integrated into the cross-border requirements, one of the most important things that we've seen in an area where you can help yourselves with your exports to the EU is the requirement to have good quality data, because we're seeing an increased emphasis on that from customs administrations, particularly when they're looking at the customs declarations, the accompanying paperwork and so on. And they're ratcheting up the pressure on us and other supply chain logistics providers to ensure that the data that we provide to them is accurate, it's provided in a timely manner, it's complete and so on. And they're actually going to be, in the European Union, they're going to be legislating from 2023 in March, a requirement for certain goods descriptions, as an example, that will be acceptable and non-acceptable. So some of the goods descriptions that are being used today will be rejected outright. And we know that that will be a problem, particularly for SMEs who are not that familiar with it. The good news is that we've got the solution. We've actually integrated these unacceptable goods descriptions into our system. So if an SME is asking us to deal with their customs declarations, their logistics and so on, we can help them by finding the solution and ensure that their goods descriptions are cleaned up before they enter into our supply chains. Another challenge that we're seeing, and it's a common one that we see within DHL Express, is that there is not a level playing field between all of the EU member states. And I'm sure a lot of the SMEs that are on this call today will be familiar with that. As an example, the way that the member states deal with the processing of prohibited and restricted items, they differ from member state to member state. So one particular commodity would be accepted, say, in France, but rejected in Italy. And that's why it's really important for us to use that information to work with the European Commission and the member states to try and get that harmonisation done across the European Union, so that you have that predictability of what the requirements are when you're actually trading into Europe and so on. So, as I said, I mean, I think the most important thing when it comes to looking at the European Union, one thing that hasn't changed, it's still the biggest trading market for the UK. And while there are these challenges in place, once you get used to the customs formalities and the requirements that are needed, it gets easier over time because you become more familiar. It's interesting also to reflect that you won't be asked for more data when you provide your shipment to others and other logistics providers, because all the information's already there. It's on your commercial invoice and it's normally on your contract to carriage. That's really the two main documents that we need with the really accurate information. And that should help the smooth flow both going into the EU and coming back into the UK from the European Union as well. But of course, when the pandemic came and shops were closing down, everyone was sitting at home, of course, ordering their goods online. I know that my wife has become a particular expert in this, and she knows the Amazon delivery guy on a first name basis. In terms of online sales in Great Britain, for example, there's been a 26% growth up until December 2021. And that's a 10% increase on the pre-pandemic proportion. So as you can see, that's quite significant. It's brought some challenges, but it's also brought opportunities as well. So looking at the opportunities, they do exist in the EU. We are here, we can assist you with that. But in order to do that, we've got to make sure that we have smart regulations and that the government is listening to us, as Russell mentioned earlier on. And we need to ensure that that trade deal, including the Northern Ireland section, is dealt with in a sensible way that is trade friendly, but also takes into account the things like safety and security that are required across international borders today. So what do we do in this space? Well, you won't be surprised to hear that DHL, a global company, is very active in their regulatory engagement with government around the world, and particularly in the EU and the UK. Most of our work is driven through our associations because, like CBI, we are stronger together. We're stronger when we lobby, when we advocate, when we engage with ministers, when we're working together. Because 99 times out of 100, us and our competitors have got the same concerns with government and procedures that don't work. What we found is really critical, though, is in that engagement, not to wait until a regulation is about to be put in place. It's really important for us to actually formulate that regulation, what I call getting ahead of the curve. And that's why we need the feedback from SMEs, from CBI members on what's working and what's not working, as Russell mentioned, because then we can help shape those regulations to make sure they're business friendly. Moving forward, and what we're looking to do as well is, as well as needing your information accurately, we need to use our expertise to actually integrate your information in our day-to-day business. With all of these changes taking place, what was actually clear to us is that we needed to also reach back to our customers on a regular basis, like CBI is doing today, to make sure they're aware of all these up and coming new requirements and adjustments that are taking place. Because what we found is that while some regulations are quite stable, like the TSA, other regulations are changing with short notice. I mean, the Brexit regulations, we didn't know to the 24th of December, of course, with an implementation of the 1st of January. But the one specific example I'm thinking about within the UK, Great Britain and Northern Ireland, is obviously the requirements between the UK and Northern Ireland, the waivers that exist to date. They can change from day to day, and that takes a lot of outreach to our customers so that they know what's taking place, so that they can anticipate these changes. So from our side, similar to what you're doing at CBI here today, we will be running a series of dedicated webinars for international trade, and all of CBI's members are welcome to attend. We'll be focusing on some of the opportunities that we see that exist within the Europe market, but also looking at some of the challenges that exist today and are forthcoming. And in that regard, we would encourage you to sign up to our webinar. Basically, you'll be able to see the link to that within the chat. And the link basically is dhlguide.co.uk/go-further. It will cover off a series of aspects of the new emerging regulations and requirements today. And you're more than welcome to join.
Thank you, Gordon. That was very, very informative. And we will make sure that the webinars are absolutely circulated. Just in terms of sort of what's working and what's not working, it was a bit of a love-in at the CBI Council about DHL, to be honest. So we will make sure we get those notes over to you, because there was lots that people were finding working. So, right. Now, Ed, I'm going to hand over to you. Really keen, obviously, to provide, you know, an overview of the Brexit landscape from an SME perspective. Also, the specific challenges that URLA has faced and how you've been, you know, very proactive in looking to overcome them.
Thanks, Debs. So I'm Ed Leahy. I'm the finance director at URLA. So we're an importer of continental cheese and yogurt. We're French owned, so we're one of our French parent company's UK subsidiaries. So clearly for us, Brexit was a key challenge and a key uncertainty. We import about 80% of our products from the EU as a whole. So I'm going to talk about how we plan for it and how it's been on the ground and a couple of things that we're still kind of wary of going forward later in the year. I think it's important for us to recognise we had no experience of importing or exporting. We moved products from Europe to the UK, but we weren't importers and we weren't exporters. And we didn't know what we were planning for. So quite a difficult situation. So the first thing was to make it a priority, put a working group together and report back on actions. We had to educate ourselves primarily. We had to reach out to people, not necessarily the government website, if I'm honest, but reach out to the CBI, trade bodies like the Provision Trade Federation, to our customers, to Chambers of Commerce, to try and understand as much as possible about trading as a third nation. And that took a bit of time. But clearly, when you work together and collaborate, these things are possible. We had to come up with different scenarios. The big worry for us was that there'd be a very hard Brexit, harder than we actually achieved in terms of import tariffs and the commercial impact of that. What would that look like in terms of pricing for our customers and the potential impact on demand? Fortunately, that kind of situation was averted, but we did end up with quite a hard Brexit. And I think for URLA, we recognised that quite early on, we were probably going to leave the single market and the customs union. And therefore, we had to work on that basis. A lot of people, a lot of other SMEs in the area talked about, well, you don't know what you're planning for, therefore, there's no point doing anything. And we felt that was the wrong thing to do, because clearly things were going to change, and therefore, you had to be prepared. So I think that was an important assumption to take in terms of our planning. But we had to be proactive in terms of reaching out to our suppliers and educate them as well. So it's no good URLA knowing what we're doing on our side. Our suppliers need to know what they need to prepare in Europe. So that was a lengthy process, but one that we kind of owned, didn't wait for that to happen. Other bits of planning that were important, Gordon talked about data. So we kind of had patchy data, if we're honest, about product weights, commodity codes. We had to clean all that up, because if you get that wrong, you can get holdups, you can get cost and delay. So again, kind of nitty gritty kind of stuff, but really important when you're dealing cross borders as we are now. We appointed a customs agent as well. We're not going to do this ourselves. We don't have the resource to bring it in-house. So we work with a partner who could provide that kind of service for us and got that in place very early on, because clearly there was a scramble for kind of customs agents resource at the last minute. We already had that kind of allocated. So our mantra really was control what you can control and mitigate the biggest risk was things being held up at ports and at borders. So we felt through those actions, we're in a reasonable place going into 1st of January this year. So then conversely, how's it been? What's the experience been like this year? It's been okay. We now have barriers to trade that we never used to have, which isn't a positive thing really, but it's not a disaster. So is that a measure of success? Depends on your point of view, probably not. But equally, it's very manageable. My summary would be things take longer. They cost a little bit more money. We've had to increase our prices to our customers, but only in a kind of modest way, not in a material way that impacts the business. So that's my kind of overall summary. But also, we've had to do things differently, and this is a positive thing to come out of Brexit. And I'll give some examples. These are probably things that we could have been doing anyway, but actually Brexit and COVID to an extent gives you that kind of impetus to look at your processes and do things differently. So the big one for Eurolay was that we were very reliant on kind of temporary labour at Christmas. So we distribute and pack and process cheese in the run up to Christmas when the demand is massive from our customers. And we relied on a lot of temporary EU workers to do that, to be honest, arriving on site in November and December. And it became apparent that due to immigration rules changes, that wasn't going to be possible or realistic to rely on. So we had to kind of shift a lot of our production activity away from Christmas, and how can we start packing and preparing product earlier in the year? So a big cross-functional project to do that, looking at kind of product life extensions, looking at product freezing, and how we can get product listed earlier in our customers. And that's been able to shift that requirement from November right into July and August, and reduce that dependency on temporary EU and GB staff as well. So it's actually made our business more resilient, safer, and easier to manage. Second one, big change for us. And again, we're not experts on this. You make your own luck in a way, by trying things differently, was about how we trade with Ireland, the Republic of Ireland in particular. So Ireland's about 10% of our business. We bring in product from France. We kind of very lightly process it in the UK and we send it into Ireland. Under the TCA, that was going to prove problematic in terms of this kind of rules of origin requirements and potentially attracting a tariff exporting back into the Republic of Ireland. So we partnered with an organisation in Southern Ireland to do a co-pack operation for us, something that we couldn't have imagined setting up before with no experience of doing it, but essential to preserve our supply to our customers in Ireland. Is that a good thing or not? We think it is, because we preserved our business, but equally that's work that was being done in the UK is now being done by a partner in Ireland. So it's kind of swings and roundabouts, but equally it highlights how you have to be agile and look at different routes to market in a post-Brexit kind of world. Third real impact on the ground, Northern Ireland, we talked about. It's relatively small for us, but we've seen a big drop off in demand. A lot of customers just shying away from Northern Ireland because they kind of don't know what's going on and it's unclear. So that's definitely something that we're keen to resolve. I think there's opportunity to do that over the next year or two. And the final area where we've kind of optimized how we work is about how we use transport. So for years, we would just kind of chuck cases of cheese on a lorry and it would just drive off and end up in Somerset. We have to utilize lorries much more efficiently and load them up fully if you're paying a customs fee to bring that lorry in. So it makes sense clearly to load it fully. It always did make sense to utilize your transport efficiently, but actually it gives you that push to look at, why are we bringing in that product in such small quantities? Can we look at our stock holdings differently to make sure that we're utilizing our logistics budget as cleverly as possible? So some good examples, I think, of just practical ways that you can look at how you work, how you structure your operations to be more resilient in the face of Brexit and the pandemic. But it has been tough. It's been a tough place to do business 2021 because of COVID, because of Brexit, because of inflation. And that's not necessarily going to get any easier over the next 12 months. So looking ahead, what are the future challenges around Brexit and supply chain? I think it's probably fair to say, particularly in the food industry, we're not out of the woods yet. There are further requirements coming in July and in September for dairy that's going to place more burden on our suppliers to get paperwork ready. So things like export health certificates for dairy products. And we're working with our suppliers to make sure they understand how they need to get those certifications done on a timely basis so that we don't get delays. So we're not resting on our laurels at all. There's going to be challenges continually on labour and how we adapt our business model because there's not so much particularly warehouse packing labour available, and we're already on the road to doing that. And we recognise that lead times are increasing as well on certain commodities like packaging. So it is tough. It's very, it's a battleground out there. But we think that, you know, with good planning and good networking through our partners, that we can overcome kind of Brexit and supply chain challenges reasonably effectively. But there are things that we need the government to put in place. Northern Ireland is one. I think you referenced, Gordon, kind of duplication of information. That's a real burden on a company like Eurolay. We're putting information into custom systems, to customs agents, into DEFRA systems. If we can just put it into one place and then that information and data cascades to where it needs to, that would be great. And my technical team would thank me for that, because that's just a frustration. It's half an hour a day, but that adds up in an SME when you've got other priorities, whether that's, you know, COVID, health and safety, you could do without it. So how can technology help support and and digitalize that process. I think it will happen for sure because businesses will make it happen. But so there are opportunities to work with the TCA. We're not looking to change it and row back on what's been agreed, but we want to make it work more effectively. And I think data and systems, it's already happening. I think people like DHL, our hauliers are doing it, but I think there's more to go, and I think the government can step up there. So that's kind of my summary. We plan for it. It's been okay on the ground, but we're not out of the woods yet, would be my kind of summary on Brexit and EU trade.
Thank you, Ed. I think, you know, that just the resilience of our SME community is fantastic. And, you know, so thank you for sharing so candidly what you've been going through. Look, we've got a couple of questions in the chat box, which actually we were talking about this earlier this morning about what's happening in Russia and Ukraine and how upsetting it all is. But there's also a question here about, you know, any increase. I mean, Russell, this might be maybe to you, increased sanctions, and maybe Gordon to you as well, in terms of, I know you're interested to hear what operations are happening in Ukraine for DHL. But really, how do we feel about increased sanctions, possible war with Russia, and how it might impact import exports with the wider EU rather than necessarily with Russia or Ukraine? Is there any, Russell, perhaps I can come to you in the first instance, then Gordon, perhaps
yeah,
to
absolutely.
You.
Listen, I know my colleagues in the international trade team at the moment are kind of talking to members around the impact of sanctions. So listen, I don't want to prejudice the work that they're doing. And if anyone on this call is particularly interested in that, listen, reach out to us after this. I think on UK and EU trade, listen, we still don't know. It's obviously it's only started this morning. However, I do think when we're talking about the wider geopolitical stuff, particularly around Brexit, listen, this is going to take up time for a lot of people in senior people in the EU and the UK. So does it, we were talking about Northern Ireland and trying to find a breakthrough in Northern Ireland, does that potentially, you know, I'm not saying it gets put to the wayside, but Liz Truss is obviously the UK's chief negotiator for that. She's going to have quite a lot on her plate. Now Russia has invaded Ukraine, so it could see perhaps Brexit and the focus on Brexit perhaps take a little bit more of a backseat. But listen, it's early days, so it's very difficult.
Gordon, is there anything you'd like to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're not here to make sort of political statements on what's going on. It's all news to us. You know, I woke up this morning to find the news, so I must admit personally it wasn't unexpected. In terms of the impact on us, all of our operations in Ukraine are suspended at the moment. Our staff have been told to stay at home, the airports are closed, and it's also the case with the Russian airports that border Ukraine. There's 10 airports that have been our operations have been closed down for some time, and we have got a massive network in Russia, so we're waiting to see now what the sanctions will be. And whatever the sanctions are, we will obviously comply with that. We've got a big compliance team that works on these topics at the moment. But it's too early to tell the impact, really. I think we need to wait for a while.
Kieran, I think what we'll do is, as an organisation, as CBI, is keep, you know, putting out information and intelligence as we get it, in terms of that, not on the political bit, as you say, Gordon, but actually what does it mean for businesses and that piece. There's news channels to talk about the politics. That's not our space. In terms of sort of preparing for controls from the 1st of July, how prepared are you feeling, and is there additional support that you want or would like? I mean, I know you've perhaps touched on that already, but just sort of thinking about that 1st of July.
From a ULA perspective, we're quite confident on what we need to do. I think our concern is, as I think I said earlier, it's going to place a lot more burden on our suppliers. So the exporters out of the EU, are they truly ready to get veterinary sign off on cheese on a daily basis? They're kind of, I'm not sure, I think it's patchy. So I think that would be my concern. We're obviously having conversations with many of them. But until you start turning the wheels in anger on putting these new processes in place, you don't quite know how it's going to work. So I think that would be my concern is we're hearing a little bit anecdotally, is that really going to happen still? Surely not. It doesn't make any sense. It is going to happen. You need to get ready. So I think that would be my concern, is that we need to be joined up on both sides of the channel. On our side, it's just about you can do trials and you can test and you can think you know what you're doing, but can you do it repeatedly 5 days a week, 7 days a week even? And what does that mean for resource internally? We think we can absorb it, but actually maybe when you start doing these things in anger, actually you need to resource differently, or you need people to work different shift patterns because actually there's product coming in the afternoons or the evenings. So it's these kind of little practical things that worry me a little bit, but I think we'll be able to adapt to it. But as I said, I think the concern is more on the EU side with some of our suppliers, because actually they've been shielded a little bit because of the phase in of the Brexit rules. Actually, it's going to be a big step up for them. So it's manageable. It might have to get a little bit tricky and a bit slower for a while, but then it will pick up and it will become embedded because there's no alternative. You have to get on with it and optimize how you work.
Yes, just get on with it, haven't you? And actually, Gordon, just coming back to your bit around, you know, imports sort of reduction, it's interesting just on a very personal basis. At Christmas, I've got family who live in Germany, and the Christmas presents arrived, and the duty that we had to pay was like quite significant for the presents that came in. I have to say, I'm buying presents now in Germany to send rather than, you know, buying presence in the UK and sending over, and they're doing the same. So on a very micro level, it's knocking each other out because we're buying in country for each other. But it's interesting just thinking about some of those changes that on a very sort of very micro personal level, it's doing, and how that sort of skews that yeah, trade on a wider basis. Thank you so much. Really good session. Really very interesting and very informative. So, Russell, thank you to you as always. Gordon, to you and DHL. Keep up the good work. And Ed, you know, keep being a trooper in terms of imports and getting that cheese around. All right. Take care, everyone. And have a good weekend when it arrives.